And now we're joined by Norman Otis Richmond. And the day is, this is October 12th. Norman, you've written a great article. I urge everybody to see it in Black Agenda Reports, where I found it, about a Black Panther leader. The famous, I always know if people know him by this nickname, Bunchy Carter.
Everybody knows him as
Bunchy Carter.
Bunchy.
Who was like
a bunch of greens.
And he was a major figure in the development of the Panthers. But, of course, you have a nice tie-in. You start him off on the point of saying he would have been with Nat Turner. I'll leave it to you. Why should we be remembering and thinking about Bunchy Carter?
Well, Apprentice Bunchy Carter was made a very serious contribution to the liberation of Africa, Africans, and all oppressed people, but he has been ignored. You know, when you think about the Black Panther Party, you think about Huey P. Newton, Eldridge Cleaver, Bobby Seale, George Jackson. You might, and the Panthers are one of the few black organizations where you think about the women. You might think about Kathleen Cleaver. You might think about Elaine Brown. You might think about Akua Najiri. That was Deborah Johnson. That was Fred Hampton's widow. You know, when Fred Hampton was killed, they made movies about Fred Hampton. But Bunchy Carter, there's a new film out called The Vanguard of the Black Revolution. He's not mentioned in there, but he was led. I guess the second chapter of the Black Panther Party began in Los Angeles, California, and Apprentice Bunchy Carter was the deputy minister of defense of the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party, which included Southern California, San Diego, you know, all the way up Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, so on and so forth. And he was assassinated on January 17th, 1969, at UCLA, along with a guy by the name of John Huggins. Mm-hmm. John Huggins was from New Haven, Connecticut, and he was the husband of Erica Huggins. Mm-hmm. And they came all the way from New Haven, Connecticut to join the Panthers, and they joined Bunchy.
She's a professor now, isn't she?
She's in Oakland. I don't know if she's a professor, but she's in the film, and she's doing a lot of work now. Mm-hmm. And John and Bunchy were killed at UCLA in Campbell Hall. There was a struggle over who was going to head the Black Studies program. And there was an ideological struggle between the US organization and the Black Panther Party. Subsequently, John Huggins and Bunchy Carter were shot and killed. Mm. And the story goes that Bunchy tried to break up this fight, and he was shot in the chest. And I think Bunchy was unarmed. Go ahead.
Well, that's quite a story. By the way, just for our listeners to think about, this weekend there was the March on Washington, the 20th anniversary, and a lot of the figures from that time were present for that. Of course, they had been there at the original March on Washington. And always, this is the Black community of America always meditating and thinking about and what the slogan should be, who the leaders should be, who succeeded and who failed.
Right.
And and one of the great organizations, certainly the most memorable of the late 60s, early 70s, was the Black Panthers. And, of course, they live on today. I mean, the personalities, but also the ideas. And, you know, when I think about that slogan, I understand the slogan at this Saturday's March on Washington. The figures were, it was tens of thousands of people were there, including some of the stars. You know, we know these names, Snoop Dogg and set, and Coombs was there, and others, and some major political figures.
Yeah,
the slogan was
P. Diddy. Yeah,
Justice
or else.
Justice or else, which is basic. I have to say that was basically, in my memory, the impetus of the founding of the Panthers. And it involved this. It was police violence, because my memory of Huey Newton was he was one of the people who was they set up a community organizations to actually observe the behavior of the police.
Well, it was they put up a community control in Oakland, and they had community controls in Los Angeles as well. But Huey Newton and his set of Panthers would go around with law books and tape recorders and cameras and, you know, police to police.
People think they're doing for the first time now.
Yeah, police, the police. And Bobby Seale led a delegation to the Sacramento, and they went into the hall.
They brought guns to the state legislature.
State legislature. And Ronald Reagan, it's in the film. There's actually footage of
Ronald Reagan didn't want to meet with him.
No, of Reagan, and they got national and international attention. But of course, the Black Panther Party was started in Lowndes County, Alabama, and they took the symbol of the Black Panther from Lowndes County, Alabama. There were also chapters of the Black Panther Party in New York City. Before, you know, Huey Newton started, but Huey Newton's faction of the Panther Party captured the imagination of the United States and the world. They had chapters in India. They had chapters in England. They had chapters in Australia. They had
in Israel, there was a Panther organization.
In Israel as well, right.
The Sephardic organization.
Right. And the Dalits in India, they had a
the Black Lives Matter people really ought to study that phenomenon, because this phrase is spreading across
the world. The whole world, yes.
What matters, and Black Lives Matter they created this, and now every major political figure is expected to speak to the question. Do Black Lives Matter? Where do you come down? What are you going to do?
The Panthers had a newspaper, the Black Panther newspaper, which was one of the most successful publications in the history of the United States. We had the Negro World by the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League. That was the greatest or the biggest black newspaper ever in terms of circulation, as well as it was printed in French and Spanish. Mm-hmm. And the Panthers had a newspaper, great newspaper, and the Muhammad Speaks, mm-hmm. the Nation of Islam, had the newspaper. But the Panther paper, I guess, you know, those of us that read a little Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, you know, the newspaper is the mm-hmm. collective organizer. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Black Panther Party one of the best things they had was that mm-hmm. publication.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a bunch of Carter. You say he was not an anti-communist, but he was, if I understand, he was more of a nationalist. But how about his colleague and fellow martyr who was killed there at the hall? How much differentiation was there in these circles? I mean, after all, they were close. They were in the same organization.
I think that I've got criticized for this, and I'll probably be criticized for this again. But the Panthers, to me, were like a united front in a sense, like the ANC. Some people in the ANC were. You had Thabo Mbeki's daddy. I can't remember his name right now. He was
Senior. We'll call him Senior.
Senior Mbeki was straight out communist.
He was a communist. That's true.
And did not back off of that. Well, you had other people, social democrats, and you had revolutionary nationalists. I believe the Panthers were similar in that. George Jackson, Huey Newton were, and Fred Hampton were Marxist, Leninist, Maoist.
Yes.
And, you know, and
I can tell. I'm a living witness. I saw people with red books, and that was it. If you were either with the red book or you were against. By the way, you know, you raise an issue in your article. You say that there was the difference part of the difference is Ron Karenga's organization, US, or U.S., and what it's meant is up to debate, but was for sort of had this word cultural. They were they thought you had to prepare the ground culturally before you could talk about politics. What I'm hearing, though, in the background, the word culture was in the middle of all the disputes because there was a so-called cultural revolution had just been kind of gone through with the Chinese people, which everybody in the world was talking about the cultural revolution and its significance. Certainly the Panthers were talking about it. But what was this difference? If you could summarize, what was Karenga's position versus his opponents?
The Black Panther Party were an anti-imperialist group that were talking about transforming the American society. Karenga's big organization, I think, was basically talking about community control. They were armed, but they killed more Panthers than police.
Yeah.
And the Panthers talked about taking on the state, the American state, and the Panthers were in league with the Vietnamese. They were in league with the Cubans. They were in league with the Kenya, so on and so forth.
Whereas there was also a Latino organization, the Brown Berets.
The Brown Berets, the Young Lords, and the
people have a hard time imagining such things were going on, actually.
And Fred Hampton,
in North America.
Fred Hampton, yes, had a relationship with the Appalachian whites. Am I saying that right? Appalachian
white is okay.
Not the Appalachia, that part.
We use that word.
Yeah. Euro, let me use it correct, politically correct, Euro-American, poor Euro-Americans, the Appalachian. Fred Hampton had, the Rainbow Coalition came from Fred Hampton, not from Jesse Jackson. It was Fred Hampton who came up with the concept of the Rainbow Coalition. But the difference was the Panthers said that the African people, the black people in America, were the vanguard of the American Revolution.
Yes, yes.
And they, you know, and Bunchy Carter, like I was talking, you asked me about Bunchy. Yeah, Bunchy was a revolutionary nationalist who was definitely not anti-communist, but he was more aimed at, he was Dessalines from Haiti was his idol, and Dedan Kimathi from the Mau Mau. In fact, the Los Angeles chapter of the Black Panther Party had to take the Mau Mau oath. And I don't know if any other groups of the Panthers
probably
had.
Probably not Chicago.
I don't know that. But I don't know.
I've
but
never
I'm saying,
heard it previous.
Yeah.
Actually, it was only reading your article that I learned of it.
Yeah.
By the way, the article, you find it, Black Agenda Report, and also in the Burning Spear online.
Yes, right.
Just go to Burning Spear.
But also, Bunchy was a had joined the Nation of Islam when he was 14 or 15 years old in the 50s. He joined the Nation of Islam in the first in the area. I lived in the same area as Bunchy. I went to junior college with Bunchy. Bunchy's 4 years older than was 4 years older than I was. But in our neighborhood, the Nation of Islam had a mosque. Number 27.
One.
No, it was 27. Uh-huh. 27. First one, I guess, was in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
but the first in Los Angeles was in that neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the first mosque in California was in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And I really want to do some research as to why San Diego. But anyway, Los Angeles, Bunchy and many of his folks joined the Nation of Islam when he was 14 or 15. So he had some consciousness before he was a Panther.
Was he? I'm trying to. Was he introduced to the Panthers while in jail?
Yes, he was in prison with Eldridge Cleaver. They were in jail, and they were
Soul on Ice. People ought to read that book just to understand that period.
They were going. To join the when Malcolm X left the Nation of Islam, they split. Inside the penitentiaries, you had, and inside the penitentiary and outside the penitentiary, you had Muslims who were Malcolm Muslims and Elijah Muslims.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a nephew that joined the Nation when he was 17. He was in there till he was 20. Mm-hmm. I have cousins who I didn't even know them until I was a grown person. They had joined the Nation of Islam in the 50s. And Eldridge and Bunchy sided with Malcolm X. They were going to start the chapter of the organization of Afro-American unity. Mm-hmm. And they saw the Panthers and they said, okay, Huey is doing what we want to do. So they joined.
We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond, and you find the article in Black Agenda Report, Bunchy Carter. We've left out a villain here that we've got to mention, because you mentioned that there was a assassination, basically. I don't know who was armed, who wasn't armed. There was a confrontation of some type. But COINTELPRO and the FBI played a big part. You discuss that in the article. What were they up to?
What was happening, there was a UCLA was hiring someone that was going to run the Black Studies Department at the university. And Ron Coringa, the head of US organization, had gone to UCLA, and Bunchy was a student at UCLA. And, you know, because you had, after he got out of prison, got scholarships to on special projects to go to UCLA. And there was a struggle between those two organizations as to who was going to run that. And COINTELPRO did initiate, you know, the conflict.
They
between,
circulated fake letters, right, in the name.
Yeah.
There are so many people fell for these things. It was a big operation. It was – now everybody's forgotten, but the FBI was – causing Americans to fight with each other, to people being killed.
The FBI was causing Americans to fight with each other, but Thomas Sankara and Burkina Faso, we had the same thing that took place in Yemen. I think there was a communist party in Yemen. They split. We had the same type of situation in Grenada. But, I mean, those were organizations – the same organizations fighting, but so the COINTELPRO and the CIA, they split the Panthers into two factions, Eldridge's group.
What you can count on your enemy to do.
And Huey Newton's group, yeah.
Get you to fight one another. This is Norman Otis Richmond. You know, and I realize that this is all pretty fascinating, but I was going to ask you also today to speak of not just Bunchy Carter, who was – this is his birthday, and I urge people to go find that article, Black Agenda Report. But Ishmael Reed has written a book about Muhammad Ali, who was also in the middle of all these things, everything, including COINTELPRO and the FBI. And just give me your picture. What do you think of what you've seen of the Reed book and his thesis about it, Muhammad Ali?
I love the fact that he's talking about the complete – Muhammad Ali, the complete Muhammad Ali, because the Muhammad Ali that many of us know and admire is a person that refused to fight in Vietnam, who was braggadocious and out of his mind, and we just love that aspect. But there was also the Muhammad Ali that was used by Jimmy Carter, going to Africa, talking a whole lot of foolishness, and there was an Ali that, you know, made fun of Joe Frazier, and so on and so forth. And this book deals with all aspects of that. And Ali, because Ali, I refused to go to Vietnam, but Ali had risked more than all of us. But at the same time, the fact that he was so hard on, you know, the whole, his thing about Africa was not, the older I get, the more I'm looking at that. It's like his view of it might, maybe it had something to do with the Nation of Islam's Asiatic black man as opposed to African people being the first people and so on and so forth. But Ali is a complex person, and like I say, he stood up and lost more than all of us. Yeah. But like at the same time. Yeah. Ishmael Reed deals with the complete Ali.
I think it's pictures.
It's a great book. Yeah,
there's some pictures. He took all. You know, it's amazing. Here's an author who is a great poet, etc., and quite well known in many fields. But when he goes out to do this book, he takes his own – he takes pictures himself. So you're not going to get some third guy, some other market or just borrowing. Most of it is stuff he says, this is me with the first wife or the second wife of Muhammad Ali.
Right.
And boy, does she have a story to tell, by the way. And then here's a guy who was his playmate in grammar school. And my favorite is he interviewed the guy, the first one to sell him –
Muhammad Speaks. Right.
Because – and Ali, he said – Cassius Clay at that time said to the man selling Muhammad Speaks, why do they call us Negroes? Isn't that a great question?
Why are we called Negroes? Why are we –
He asked the right guy. He asked the
right – But, you know, one of the things that I didn't find out in this book, I was very disappointed. Stepan Fetchit, who was supposed to be this buffoon and so on and so forth, was with Ali for a second. Stepan Fetchit joined the Nation of Islam. I'm certain that is true. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, Stepan Fetchit was, not Stepan Fetchit, it'll come to me and I'll bring it up next, you can bring it next week, but yeah. a comedian that was Stepan Fetchit, he was.
I thought it was Stepan Fetchit.
It might have been Stepan Fetchit, but he was with Ali. And he, I mean, you know, like he made his money as, you know, this buffoon and all this, but he was behind the scenes, he was a militant and he was with Ali.
Well, you know, the slave masters complained of that. They said that those slaves are awfully nice, but when they got a chance to rebel, they rebelled. you're listening to the Taylor Report, CIAT. Hanny, thank you very much. And Norman Otis Richmond, a great pleasure. Thank you. We'll see you next week.